He's God and we're not, and nothing is bigger than him. He's unchangeable. He's unshakable. He's unstoppable. That's kind of cool. I like that about God. I'm glad he's not a little God that can't like handle our problems. Aren't you? We act like he is sometimes, don't we? Oh, no, God, you didn't know that I was going to get this bill. Oh, no, God, you didn't know that my boss was going to say that. Oh, and we act like, what are we going to do? And we worry and we stress and we don't need to, do we? He's in charge. Has anything ever taken him by surprise? Not yet. And nothing ever will it? Nothing takes him by surprise. Anything ever surprise you? You ever get surprised? Let's take a quick survey here real quick. We're in a series called Don't Be That Guy. And today we're going to talk about not being that guy that's unprepared, that gets surprised by some stuff. So my question to you this morning is, have you ever, and I don't know if you want to even admit this, this is kind of fun to see, have you ever run out of gas? Anybody ever run out of gas if you drive? I guess if you don't drive, you wouldn't have. Has anyone ever never run out of gas? Are you kidding me? Are you serious? Yeah, Michael, yeah, but still. I mean, Jennifer, you've never run out of gas? You've never run out, neither one of you have run out of gas. That's why y'all are married. Exactly. Well, my light doesn't really work that well. Yeah, that's what it is. Jordan, you don't drive, so. Right, that's right, that's right. I can't believe you never run out of gas. Who else? So that's like four, five, six? Donna, come on. Now, we're in church now. Come on, seriously. I can't believe that you, have you run out of gas? Have you ever, has Alex ever run out of gas? Yeah, yeah. See, if you don't run out of gas, if you've never run out of gas, you're not living on the edge enough. You're not, you're playing it too safe. Yeah, you're playing it too safe. Here's the amazing thing to me, though, is you ever wonder why you're running out of gas? Like, my car, it has a light that comes on, which I have it in the car that I have now, but it has a light, and it has a, it'll tell you how far you have to go until you run out of gas, which is great, except mine's not real accurate because it'll be like 35 miles to go till you run out of gas, and I have plenty of time, and I'll be on the interstate in the middle of nowhere, and then all of a sudden it just drops down to 20, and all of a sudden it'll go to 7. I mean, like within a mile, and I'm like, man, this isn't good. So it's kind of scary, but I've done it a couple times, and I feel, don't you just feel, I just feel dumb when I do it. I do. I feel, the last time was a long time ago. I had to get a friend named Tommy to come get me. And it was terrible. I felt really. Have you done it recently? I'm sorry. You done it recently? 6 months ago? Who's the most recent? When did it happen, Alan? When did you run out of gas? Today? Wow. Did you have to get Jim to come get you or something? Oh, they waved at you. Did they help you? Okay, good. Because we'll have to go back to that whole 11 people thing if they didn't. That's awesome. Where were you? Right out, oh, right there where everybody can drive by and see you. That's the best place. That's the best place. At least you can walk to your house and get a can, I guess. Golly, that's the worst thing. But it takes us by surprise. And the reason that we run out of gas is because when you're driving and you're low on gas, everything's fine, right? The car's running. The radio works. The air conditioner works. I mean, everything's fine. We don't need to get gas. We'll get it tomorrow. We don't have time right now. We'll take care of it later. We're good, right? That's why you run out of gas. It's not because you think the car won't run out of gas. You know that eventually the car will run out of gas and stop running. We understand this. We just don't act on what we know. See, that's the definition, really a good definition of wisdom. Wisdom isn't knowing a whole lot of stuff. Wisdom is actually acting on the stuff that you already know. It's doing something about it. It's actually being prepared. And so we're in this series talking about how not to be that guy. You know who that guy, this week's that guy is that guy that's just never prepared, that's not ready for stuff, that wasn't prepared for the car to run out of gas. Or maybe that guy, you know the guy that lives on the edge of the ledge. I mean, he's right there. I mean, he's living paycheck to paycheck with like a big credit card bill as well that's adding up onto that. So he's like, he's not only living paycheck to paycheck, but living with more stuff. And he's going around thinking, well, next week's going to be just like this week. So surely I can just go ahead and spend it all. I don't need to save anything. Don't need to do it. And I'm just going to go ahead. I'll go ahead and extend myself a little bit further. And then what happens? Then that car that ran out of gas, then the alternator goes in it or the engine blows up. And we think that that'll never happen because it didn't happen before. So we'll be fine. And then all of a sudden we didn't prepare and we weren't ready for it. And then we're like, man, just get more on the credit card, and then that comes a bill that you have to pay every month, and it goes over and over. Maybe it's not that guy. Maybe you know that guy that's never ready. Like, you ever go out to eat with that guy? Have you ever been to eat with that guy? And you're sitting at the table with him, and the bill comes, and they weren't ready for it. It's like they're surprised by it. Oh, wait, I don't have my wallet. You know that guy? Have you ever had dinner with them? Yeah, you don't have their wallet, and then all of a sudden you end up paying for it. Yeah, I know that guy. I know that guy. That guy. One of those guys is in here right now. But there. But that's. But I, it's not you. It's. They know who they are. But you get that guy, and they're really generous. They just forgot their wallet. Was all. It wasn't a big deal. But so everything's fine. But then all of a sudden these things come up and they surprise us. Right. We're just not ready for them. Even the regular things in life, a lot of times we're not ready for. Right. You ever been surprised by April 15th? Has that ever snuck up on you? Tax day? How many of you have not done your taxes yet? Right on, me and Fran, man, way to go. I filed an extension, so we'll be fine. We're going to be fine. Yeah, we're going to be fine. We filed an extension, we're okay, and which is really dumb to do that if the government owes you money, because then you're just giving an interest-free loan, which is what happens. But anyway, and so it's just stuff to get ready. But I don't know why it surprises you every year. April 15th comes the same time, doesn't it? How about your tags? Have you ever had an expired tag? You ever had that happen? Now, why does that happen? Doesn't it expire the same time every year? Every year on your birthday is when it goes bad, yet somehow we're driving down the road and you get pulled over and all of a sudden, oh, my tax expired? Oh, I didn't know that. I wasn't prepared for that. I didn't know that was going to happen. You ever miss your anniversary? Comes the same time every year, right? Every year, some of you guys are right now, you're getting nervous. You're thinking, man, when is it? When is it? Did I forget it already? Okay, so you forget your anniversary, your mom's birthday, same time every year. All this stuff that keeps coming up all the time, over and over, and they're predictable things, but they sneak up on us, and even though we know they're coming, just like running out of gas, we don't prepare for them, we don't plan for them, and we just kind of live on the edge. Maybe it's even the unpredictable things, like your car breaking down, all of a sudden, man, I didn't know that was coming, now where am I going to get the money from? Or your kid chipping a tooth, or they need braces, or they have to go to the doctor, or you have to go to the doctor, or I mean, who? There's all. Has Murphy ever just moved into your house and lived there for a while? Anything that could go wrong did go wrong, and it's like, man, I wasn't prepared for this. I didn't know. I thought everything was going to go along perfect. Or maybe it's not as significant as that. Maybe your cat gets sick, really sick. Well, that's easy. You don't have to do anything for that. Just put him outside, and it'll be fine. You know, I'm kidding. Let's say it's your dog. If your dog gets sick, then you have to take him to the vet, and you have to spend all this money on him. You weren't planning on doing that. That could be bad. We live lives like there'll never be an emergency, don't we? Like nothing will ever come up. But it always does, doesn't it? Why do we do that? Why are we not prepared? Let's take another survey. How many of you think that maybe one day you'll stand before God? Okay, good deal. Because now there's either two ways. One, you're going to die. They took some stimulus money and they did a new study and they found out that five out of every five people die. The new study, it really is. Your tax dollars at work. I'm just kidding. But seriously, everybody dies. We know this, right? We understand this. Or, in fact, where the text we're looking at today, just talking about Jesus coming back, which he will and can at any moment, really. He's coming back. When he comes back, then it's game over. Then you stand before God. If you look to your left and you look to your right, don't do it right now. But if you did, the person you would be looking at will be standing before God one day. And one of you will be standing before them before the other, probably. So every one of us in here knows and we understand and we acknowledge that maybe it's possible that we're going to even die one day. Don't raise your hand for this, but how many of you have a will? Do you have a will? You just admitted and you acknowledge that you're going to die one day. Are you prepared for that? Are you preparing for your family to do that? You should. It's easy, man. LegalZoom.com. I'm not getting any money from them at all, man. I'm telling you, it'll take you less than an hour and your family will thank you in case the tragic happens. But that's just extra stuff. But that's just preparing to die. But what about the will? But we're going to be before God forever, right? Are you ready for that? I mean, like, what if this last week was the last week you had to live? I hope it's not. But what if it was? Would you be ready? One of my friends is he was about 55 years old. His name is Jimmy Chesser. I went to his funeral yesterday. He was on vacation in Maine and had a heart attack. I hugged his daughters yesterday and his wife. And they said, they weren't expecting him to die. 55. He was my age when I met him, and he was teaching sixth grade boys, and he's given his life to serving Christ. It's been great. Somebody else died last week, too, I think. I don't know. Somebody, about 150,000 other people every day die. 155,000 people is what the statistics tell us. The average is every day, 155,000 people step out off this planet into eternity. They stand before God, just like Michael Jackson, just like Farrah Fawcett, just like Ed McMahon. There's a girl in Iraq last Saturday that got out of her car at a protest. She's 26 years old. Her name was Nada. She got out of her car and took a bullet to the chest, and it's on YouTube and the news and everywhere. She just died. She's in eternity now. She wasn't expecting to be there. Happens every day. Happens all the time. And we know it's coming, but we don't prepare for it. We think we have plenty of time. And so what we'll do is this week, we'll live like we have a million weeks left. And so it doesn't really matter if I waste all my time in front of the TV or on Facebook or on Twitter, even though those are good things sometimes. But, you know, if I waste all my time, because I've got next week still. So what if this week doesn't count for God? So what if I just kind of, what if I just kind of blow this summer off? You know, I'm out of school. And what if I just try to get a tan this summer? How about that? You think you're going to stand before God? When you stand before God, you're going to say, what'd you do for me? How'd you do with that whole life thing I gave you? Well, I got this really good tan. That's not going to happen. He's not going to say that. What he's going to care about is what we're going to talk about at the end of this. But what really matters in life? What's really the most important thing? That's the question I have for you today. And here's the question I have for you. It really is are you prepared for that? Because if you live like there'll never be an emergency, if you live like it's going to go on forever, then you're missing it. You acknowledge in your head that it's going to end someday, so you might as well be ready for it now. Because just like about 155,000 other people, my friend Jimmy Chester stepped into eternity, and now he's in heaven because he trusted Jesus. And man, he served Christ, and to hear his family talk about him and how he loved God, how he loved people, how he was actively involved and actually changing the world. It is amazing. That's what I want people to say about me. I think that's what you want your kids to be able to say about you. Why aren't we there? Are you ready? Maybe you are. And if you're not, what will it take to get there? Let's look at the text and we'll see. Matthew chapter 25. See what Jesus says. Now here, Jesus is talking to his disciples and he's warned them. We saw in chapter 23 how he told them not to be that proud religious guy. Chapter 24, he went through and just talked a lot about the signs of the end of the time, the close of the age, when he comes back. And that's really talking about when he comes back. It's not talking about a rapture in 24. It's talking about the end of the game right there. And here he explains it a little further, but uses a story of a wedding. And at a wedding, they would have bridesmaids, groomsmen. They were usually virgins, and that's what it says here. And so there were 10 of these guys, and their responsibility was to be kind of the wedding party. But it wasn't like our weddings where they just stood on a stage and you had to give them a present and stuff like that. But they had to wear an ugly dress and a good-looking tux. Or they're not ugly dresses anymore, are they? They're good-looking. But did anybody ever wear a bridesmaid's dress that was ugly? You guys ever, you pick one out, you thought it was cool at the time, and now you look back at the pictures and going, man, what was that? Anyway, another story. These guys, instead of just standing on a stage, this wedding deal in this day was about a week long. There were three phases to it. There's a betrothal, there's an engagement, a betrothal, and then the wedding is a big, huge feast or party that lasts about a week, and people come from all over the country. They come from out of town. They pack the place out. And they just stay for a week, and you have a party and a feast. But it starts when the groom shows up. And so he's not there yet, and their job is kind of to light the way for the procession going in. They're kind of part of a parade, and everybody goes in, and it's a big deal, and then they say, let's start eating, whatever, which is the best part of a wedding, really, is the eating part. And so they get ready to eat, but these guys are to lead the way in, and they actually each have a lamp, and we'll see about that. We'll see how they have that in just a second here. Matthew 25:1, Jesus is talking just to his disciples here now, and he says, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. So there's 10 of them, and they have these lamps that are kind of part of their get-up. They have to wear special clothes as well. They have to be invited. Their name has to be on the list, all these things. So they're dressed right, they're in the right place, and they have the right equipment, apparently. But five of them were foolish, and five were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. So they have these lamps that need oil to work, and they didn't take any oil. Why in the world do you think they did that? Why would you take a lamp without oil? Why would you have a car without gas? I don't know. Why do these guys have no oil? And then the text doesn't tell us, and it's a story really Jesus is using to illustrate a point. But I can think of some reasons, can't you? Why you would have a lamp with no oil when your batteries were dead or whatever. Or maybe it's daylight. Maybe they're thinking, you know, these lamps are just for looks. I mean, they probably show up about noon. And if we do this thing at noon, we don't need any oil. We're going to be fine. We walk in, we hold them up, and everybody says, yay, the groom's here, and we have the party, and it's great. But maybe they just weren't expecting. Maybe they were just thinking, you know what, we don't have any oil right now. Let's get there right now, and then if it gets dark, we'll go get some oil, and we'll be fine. I don't know. For whatever reason, they didn't have any oil. And he says the wise ones took flasks of oil with their lamps. See, the wise people, the wise ones, they acted on the knowledge that they had. They knew that they may be required to use the lamp, so they had oil for the lamp. Makes sense, doesn't it? This isn't going to do you good to go camping with a flashlight with no batteries, is it? So these guys, they basically said, okay, it's probably going to get dark, so let's get some batteries. It might get dark, so let's get some oil. So they bring their oil with them. Now, as the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy. Now, you have to understand, when Jesus is telling this, he's just finished talking about when he's coming back. And these first disciples, they lived every day expecting Jesus to return at any moment. He said, listen, it may be a little longer than you think, is what he's trying to get across to them. It may be 2,000 years. It may be 2,010 years. It may be 2,015. Who knows? But he said, listen, it's going to be, it may be longer than you think. So the picture is the wedding party is waiting for the groom to get there. They're all ready. They're all dressed. They're probably sweating and all this stuff. They're sitting there thinking, when's he going to get here? When's this party going to start? And so the bridegroom was delayed. They became drowsy. They fell asleep. But at midnight, there was a cry. It's always at midnight, isn't it? That's a good story, isn't it? It's at midnight. There's a cry. Here is the bridegroom. Here comes the bridegroom. They didn't sing it like that, but here is the bridegroom. And so the bridegroom is here. Come on out to meet him. And so then everybody gets up. They're getting dressed. They're getting the creases out of their stuff. And the virgins, they rose and they trimmed their lamps. They're getting them ready to light. And the foolish said to the wise, you know, the foolish ones, the ones that acted like they wouldn't need a lamp in the dark, they said to the ones that prepared to use a lamp when it got dark, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves. So basically what you have here is these five that are unprepared looking at the five that are prepared and saying, hey, you brought enough stuff. Share. And the guys that are saying that we can't share, we won't have enough. And then they won't have any lamps and there won't be any way to light the way. And you have to go get your own, man. You can't just have ours. Now, understand what Jesus is talking about here. He's talking about really with the oil. He's talking about the Holy Spirit, really a personal relationship with God himself, a relationship with Jesus. Now, why in the world these guys showed up without oil, I can't imagine, but people do it all the time. They come and they get involved in church, and they look like church people. They even keep a set of rules. They have a religious background. They've done some religious activity. But when you get right down to it, they don't have a relationship with Jesus because they're just doing church on Sunday. And they acknowledge God, but they don't live for him. They don't follow him. They don't know him. They don't have a relationship with Jesus. And they're like the ones without any oil in their lamps. You look at them on the outside, they look like they're going to heaven. They look like they should be in the party. They look great. But day after day, there's no relationship with Jesus. They haven't trusted him. They haven't turned from their sin and placed their faith in him. Maybe they're counting on their good works to get him in there. Maybe they're thinking, if I dress right, talk right, and do all this stuff right, then he'll let me in. But that's not how it works. And so then he's saying the day is going to come, either at your death or at the return of Christ, where you're going to say, man, I don't have it, and I need it. Can I have some of yours? And there are people that do that. They think, well, my husband's real spiritual. He loves God, so I must be able to, I'll be okay. Or maybe my kids love God. Or maybe you know, see, that's the thing. You can't love God for your husband. You can't love God for your kids. It's a personal deal. And just because your uncle built a church or was a pastor or was a deacon somewhere, that doesn't mean you're going to heaven. Just because your dad was, that doesn't mean you're going to heaven. Just because even you were religious at one time, that doesn't mean you're going to heaven. And if you love God, it doesn't necessarily mean that those closest to you do. Or if you are around Christians, it doesn't mean that you are one. I mean, if that's all it took is being near stuff to get the benefit of it, I'd be really big because I walk by the gym all the time. Right? I'm in there. I looked at the weight machine. I hung around with people that were using them. I thought it was a great idea. In fact, it was kind of cool. It was kind of neat. It's air conditioned in our gym. Right? It's cooler in there than it is outside. And so it's kind of nice in there. But I don't get in shape by doing that, do I? It doesn't help. I have to actually do something with this. In fact, so it's just like if you come to church and you sing about Jesus, you talk about Jesus, and you hang around people that love Jesus, that's not going to get you into heaven. You need to surrender your heart to Jesus. You need to love him. You need to know him. You need to repent of your sin and place your faith in him. That's what the gospel is. The gospel isn't you come, do good, and try harder, and you get to go to heaven. The gospel is you show up, you acknowledge that you're a sinner. You understand that you've broken God's law, that you are a sinner, and that the wages of sin is death. And you can't earn your way to heaven, you can't pay your way to heaven, you can't be good enough to get there, but you say, okay, I understand that, and I understand Jesus died on a cross to pay for my sin. In fact, he lived a perfect life so that when he died, he took the punishment that I deserved. And when he takes the punishment that I deserve, he's buried and he rises again. The Bible says anyone that places their faith in Him, anyone that trusts Jesus, has their sins forgiven, gets their sin covered. His righteousness is put on your account. That's pretty cool. Your sin's put on His account. His righteousness is put on your account. I know I talk about it all the time, but I just haven't got over that. Have you gotten over that? Have you gotten over the fact, if you're a Christian, that the righteousness of Christ is applied to your wretched account? I mean, if you've understood how sinful sin is and how vile it is, that you can be forgiven and clean, that's incredible. But being a Christian, that's what it means. It means you trust Jesus. And not only do you believe, it's not saying I just acknowledge that He exists, but I believe in Him. I trust Him. In fact, I surrender to Him and I follow Him. That's what it means to be a Christian. So these guys said, hey, give us some of your stuff. They said, no, we're not going to do that. And so they went to go, they said, you need to go get your own oil. And that's the difference between someone that knows Christ and doesn't, I think, a lot of times. I was talking to a friend, he's not here today, but I was talking to Kevin about it last week in McDonald's for some reason. We saw each other, and he was just talking about, man, I just love when I read the Bible for myself, he said. It's really neat. He hasn't been a Christian that long. But he said, man, I just get more out of it when I read it for myself. I went, man, that's really cool. That's how it should be. You should have, it's your relationship with Jesus. It's not like I need somebody else to pump me up or show me this. I can't get it from somebody else. I need to know God for myself. So while they're going to buy, the bridegroom came. So they leave the party and they go to the store, to the oil store. I don't know where that was. They probably had the little gas pump thing. You could just swipe their card. So they're going real quick, trying to get it done, get them some oil. And while they're gone, the bridegroom shows up. And this is key. And those who were dressed right, those who were present, what does it say? Those who were church people. Now, those who were ready, right? Those who were prepared. Those who had the oil in this case, but what the point Jesus is making is those who knew Him, those who trusted Him, those who believed in Him, those who had a relationship with Jesus, went in with Him to the marriage, which is a picture of heaven. They went in with Him to the marriage feast. The door was shut, and afterward, the other virgins came also. This is scary, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. They're saying the right words, but He answered, truly I say to you, I do not know you. That's scary. They were at the wedding. They were dressed the right way. They were around the right people. They were probably keeping some rules. He says, sorry, you're not getting in. So the Bible says, the scariest verse that I've ever read in the Bible, you can jot it down. I don't have it on the screen or anything. It's Matthew chapter 7, verse 21. Matthew 7, 21, it's talking about religious people. People that taught the Bible. People that tried to help other people. But it says this. It says, on that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord. In fact, let me look it up here. It says, here's what it says, because I learned it in a different version than this, but I want you to hear this. This is Jesus talking. He says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven, which means he trusts in Him. On that day, many will say to me, but Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name? And then I will declare to them, yeah, you were busy about doing all that stuff, but it wasn't the most important thing. You didn't trust me. You didn't know me. I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. Listen, what he's saying is these people in the story missed their window of opportunity to trust Christ. I don't know when your window is going to close if you haven't trusted Him yet. But you have the opportunity now. So you need to trust Him today. You need to give your heart to Him. And I'm not one of those, I'm not that guy. I'm not the guy that you're going to come and say you could leave here getting a crash and all that. You could, but that's not the whole point. The whole point is you don't know how long you have. We don't know. And if God's working on your heart right now, say yes. Man, give your heart to Christ now. In fact, I want to take it a step further because a lot of you have already trusted Christ. And if you have, you've got stuff that you know He wants you to do. You know there's some stuff that's really most important in life, and you've put it on a back burner thinking, I'm going to take care of that issue later. Some of you, and maybe it's a will, or maybe it's an insurance thing, or maybe it's just a relationship thing. Maybe there's somebody you have there's something that's between you and somebody you care deeply about, but you're putting it off and you're saying, I'm going to take care of that later. Do what's most important now because you don't know how long you have. Anyway, the time to surrender to Jesus is now. He says, watch therefore, verse 13, for you know neither the day nor the hour. So that's really the kind of part one of this whole deal here is I want to make sure that you get the most important thing. To be prepared for heaven, you need to believe in Jesus. You need to trust Him. You need to surrender your heart to Him. You can do that right now, right where you're sitting. don't have to wait for the end of this message. You don't have to wait for it to bow your head. You just say, Jesus, in your heart, I trust you. I want to give my heart to you. I want to follow you. I want to surrender to you. I want to give you my life. Please forgive me. Please save me. That's it. That's what matters most. But then on the second thing, what really matters most in life? Have you ever done this? Have you ever just sat down and taken some time? Maybe you can do this today. Have you ever taken time and just written down maybe the top three things that matter most to you in your life, or maybe the top five? Just wrote them down. You ever think about that? What is really the most important thing in your life? What matters most? And you know what? You know what's funny is I bet most of you are not going to put paycheck. I bet you're not going to put overtime. I bet you're not going to put surfing, even though I think that's kind of important. I like that. You're not going to put hunting. You're not going to put fishing. There'll be things that have to do with your family, things that have to do with your health, things that have to do with, hopefully, God should be number one. But then look at that list. After you take time, get alone with God, just take 10 or 15 minutes. I know it's contrary to your nature to not be on Facebook or watching TV, but take 15 minutes, turn everything off, and ask God. Say, God, show me what really matters. What do you want me to do in this life? Why am I here? What are the five most important things in my life? And then look at your time and say, what am I really investing my time in? What am I putting my energy in? Where's all my effort going? What do I think about the most? Is it these things or is it something else? You'll be shocked. Because you have a limited amount of time, and we know that this time's going to end. Why are we wasting it on stuff that doesn't matter? It's not the most important thing. Maybe it matters, it's just not as important as some stuff we're neglecting for it. That's why, as a church, we want to really fight hard to keep things simple here. Because here's the thing, just like these guys were around the good people, it's easy to get involved in a church sometimes and get real busy and get active. And you think that because I'm involved in a ministry, because I'm serving here, because I'm doing this, because I went to that Bible study, because I did something, that now I must be right with God. That's not the case. That's why we keep it super, super simple. We're going to fight to keep it simple here for a couple of reasons I'll share with you in a moment. But one, the first thing we want to make sure you do is love God. A guy asked Jesus one day in Matthew chapter 22. He asked him, he said, what's the most important command? What's the greatest commandment in all the law? He said, what is the greatest commandment in Matthew 22:37? And Jesus answered him and he said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. So that is what is most important. Now you can grade us, those of you that have been here for a little while now, and tell us, because I mean, I'm telling you, even though we know this, it's kind of like the gas gauge. We know this is important, this has to be here. But it's easy for us to get distracted, isn't it? And we start thinking it's about our ministry, or it's about this program, or it's about this event, and it's not. It's all about loving God. That's what it's about. Do you love him? Now, you can't love him if you don't know him. If you haven't turned from your sin and placed your faith in him, you may think you love God, but you've got a sin thing coming in between you and him, and you need to repent, trust Jesus in order to get right with him. That's where it starts, and that's why we'll always tell you about who God is. That's why we sing to him. That's why we want to love him. But have you ever known anyone that said they loved God, but you didn't really want to be around them? You know people that are like really, really holy, and they like to keep the rules, and they know a lot about God in the Bible, but man, you don't want to have dinner with them? You sure? If you're a waiter or a waitress, you don't want them to come to your table because you know they're going to complain, they're never going to tip well, they're just going to judge you. You know people like that? That's because they're not doing the second most important thing. Second most important thing is this, and really I doubt they're doing the first thing. They just think they love God. They said this is the first and great commandment. Then he said the second one is like it. The second one's just like it. He said, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I just sat here quietly for a minute because I want you to read that again, not look at me and be nervous for me. I know what I want to say. But did you read that? Do you get that? See, here's the deal. When I first became a Christian, I'll tell you this. Here's what it was. I thought deep meant that you could like quote Greek words, which I couldn't read them. I can barely read them now, but I would quote other guys that did and parse them. I thought it meant that you could out-argue, that you could totally understand the sovereignty of God and the responsibility of men and reconcile the two things. I thought that it meant you could put a paedo-baptist in their place. You could explain amillennialism, premillennialism. I thought deep meant that you knew if you were pre-trib, post-trib, mid-trib, rapture. You understood all that stuff. Oh, that's what deep was. That's not deep. That's just head knowledge. People have this idea that they think, and some of you may leave here because you think it's not deep, and you want to go somewhere where somebody will tell you about, I don't know, some of that stuff. And it's not always a bad thing. I think there's some good stuff to be gleaned there. But so many times I've seen so many Christians get off and off the target, off the main thing, because they think it's about how much they know and who they can out-argue and what way they voted and all this other stuff. And Jesus said, really what I want you to do is to love God and love your neighbor as you love yourself. That's deep. You know, you can win the argument, but go home and try to love the person that lives next door to you. I mean, literally, let's take it literally. Do your neighbor. He's not talking about your neighbor. Go home and love your neighbor like you love yourself. I mean, give them, like, so if you buy yourself a kayak, go buy them one. I'm serious. I mean, what if we did that? What if we said, you know what? If I'm going to love my neighbor like I love myself, that means that if I want to make sure my kids have a Wii, then I'm going to make sure their kids have a Wii. Wouldn't that be, that's a little radical, isn't it? We're not so sure about that, are we? But Jesus said, love your neighbor like you love yourself. That's what we're supposed to be doing. That's why as a church, we want to make sure you love God. We want to make sure you get connected with other people. Get on a ministry team, serve with them, hang out with them. Come to one of our, we got 5 small group Bible studies going now. You don't have to go to everyone. Just plug into one. A women's on Tuesday morning, a men's on Friday morning at 6 o'clock. Men's on Friday morning at 6 o'clock. I'm cooking you breakfast. Men, Friday mornings at 6 o'clock, cooking you breakfast at the Crab Shack. Wednesday night at my house. Friday night at Alan's house. The students meet at Heritage Landing at 7 o'clock on Wednesday nights. And really, because like this isn't that big, but you don't get to know each other here. You get to know each other when you hang out in someone's house, when you spend time together, when you do life together. You need to be a part of that. And we want to start more. If you want to host one, let me know. We'll get you going. But we want to love people. See, deep is when you connect with someone else's life. It's not when you sing without any music. I don't know what that was. That was kind of wild. It's not deep is not when you have all the answers and you check all the boxes. Deep is when you really love God and you love people. Thanks, Alba. Are you embarrassed? You look embarrassed. You shouldn't be. It was Becky's phone? Okay. That's okay. They don't have those in your country. So you don't, yeah, it's no problem. I'm just kidding, they do. That's an inside joke. But I should never do an inside joke up here. I've totally lost it. Okay, so we're all about loving God and loving people, right? We're going to be always about loving God and loving people. And then we're going to be about this because Jesus gave us a mission as a church. And it wasn't to make a bunch of teams and committees and do a bunch of stuff. His mission for us was this right here, Matthew chapter 28. He said, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. He said, I've got all the authority. He said, well, first he said, on these two things, all the commandments hang on these things. So let's go ahead and go to Matthew 28. The last thing he told us to do before he leaves is in Matthew 28. And it'll come up here in a minute. But he said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go and make disciples. You're to go and find people that don't know me and help them to know me and follow me. That's what a disciple is. It's someone that didn't know God. Now they know God. Now they trust Jesus. Now they obey Jesus. You teach them everything I've commanded them. Then make disciples of them. And then you're supposed to baptize them. Baptizing is just, it doesn't make you a Christian to get baptized. But he says, when you become a Christian, then you get baptized. You make them my disciple. Then you baptize them. You publicly identify with the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. You have the opportunity to do that. If you haven't, the coolest place to ever get baptized, not the coolest ever, coolest place ever would have to be like a Jordan River, but the second coolest place would have to be the Atlantic Ocean, I think. And so on July 12th, we're going to eat lunch here, and then we're going to go out to the beach, and if there's waves, we'll surf, then we'll definitely fish, and we'll also have a baptism service. So if you've trusted Christ and you need to be baptized, see me about that. I'd love to baptize you in the Atlantic Ocean. It'll be cool. And that's the one place you'll get away with not having to share your story in front of everybody. I'll still share it a little bit. I'll tell everybody about it, but you won't have to. Because there's no way to do it really that way. So that's a great time to do it. So that's July 12th. See me about that if you want to see that. But we're to baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Now, and again, the baptizing becomes after you become a disciple is what the Bible says. I mean, that's what Jesus said. You go make them, help them become disciples, and then baptize them. Teach them to observe all that I've commanded you, the Bible, and behold, I'm with you always, even the end of the age. That's what church is supposed to be about. And we're always going to be about that. And we're going to lose people because of this. Because we're not going to be a church that's like every other church. We're not going to do it the way maybe you did it at your old church. We're not going to have every program, every ministry, not a softball team, not a men's ministry, not a women's ministry right now. What we do, we have women that get together, that study the Bible, that are going to go places together and do stuff, and that's great. We have men that get together, study the Bible, and go places and do stuff. But it's not a whole other thing. What we're focusing on as a church, small groups, Sunday morning, missions. I mean, that's really about it. And that's what we do. And that's who we are, in kids and students. You know, that's pretty much it. We're not being a million different things. We're not trying to do a million different things. Now, all these groups are going to do a lot of different stuff. But that's just part of being a Christian. We'll talk about some of that in a moment. But what we're going to be about, here's the other thing too, is we're not going to change to keep you. We're not going to change our philosophy, our ministry, to make an insider happy, somebody that already knows Christ. We are doing what we do in order to reach people. And because that's what this Matthew 28 says, right? Isn't that what it's supposed to be about? But ministry is supposed to be about reaching people, right? Not keeping people. It's about reaching people and not keeping them. And the moment we change and we start saying, oh, you know what? God told us to do these three things, but if we don't start doing this to keep insiders happy or to keep somebody that's already going on the way to heaven, I mean, I want you to be happy, and I want to let, don't misunderstand me. We're going to love you like crazy, and we want you to grow. But this is not about keeping people. This is not about us. This is not about what we like. We're doing what we're doing to reach people, to change this world, to love God, love people, and change the world. Does that make sense? You guys with me? Say you're with me if you're with me. And if you're not, I guess you won't have to be here next week. But hopefully you will. I hope you'll all be here next week. But seriously, because here's what the coolest thing about this is it's not about us. It's not about us getting together so we can have a little safe little place where nobody hears a cuss word. It's not so we can get together and be safe and not have anything, you know, bad influence. In fact, I want you to have time to go out and be friends with people that cuss. I don't want you to be cussing necessarily all the time, but I want you to be friends with people that don't know God. Listen, if you're part of Providence and you don't know anybody that's on their way to hell, you're missing the whole point of what we're doing here. Because we are here to reach people that don't know God. That's why we're still here. We're here to worship God together and grow together, but not to become a little club of good people. We want to be a group of people that are passionate about reaching people that don't know God. That's one of my favorite things and I can't even say it. Never mind. It'll get on the podcast. I just love it. I love it when people that don't know God show up at Providence. They do it all the time. They're here today. And you're welcome here. It's a safe place to come. It's a great place to come. Because I used to be an agnostic. You don't have to come here and toe the line on everything. You can come and find out about who God is and grow and take your time. But you're going to meet people that really love Him and that really love you and that are serious about wanting to do what He told us to do. That's what we're always going to be about. And again, I said that, you know, that sometimes it's not for everybody. Some people want a place where there's going to be a bunch of, you know, some guys stand up and tell you Greek words and do all this stuff, and that's great. I mean, I listen to guys that do that, and I grow and I learn from them. That's what I have an iPod for. I want that stuff. I get that. But, man, I want to be somewhere where I know I can bring my friend that doesn't know God, and they can connect, and they can hear the truth about Him, and where I can understand who God is and how big He is, and so I can grow with Him. I'm so far off my notes. It's crazy. But what I want you to know is this. What we're about, the reason we're going to keep it simple like that is the same, is so you don't end up like the virgin with no oil. So you don't end up at the end of your life going, whoa, I didn't know this was going to happen. I thought it was all about activity. I thought it was all about sports. I thought it was all about whatever. I thought it was all about church stuff. But the reality is it was all about Jesus. It was all about loving God. It was all about loving people. It was all about changing the world. And boom, here it is. And I haven't done any of that. I don't want you to end up there. And I want to make it crystal clear when people come here, this is what matters most. That's what we're going to do. Does that make sense? Don't get into your life and realize you wasted it. Don't get into this week and look back and go, man, I had a week that God gave me and I didn't do any love in Him. I didn't do any love in people. I didn't do any change in the world. Get involved and do that now. Maybe the first step for you this morning is to really trust Him. And now listen. I'm not talking about praying a prayer, even though I'll kind of lead you in a prayer. Because I know a lot of people that have prayed a prayer, but their life never changed. I'm talking about surrendering your heart to Jesus, to really have a relationship with Him. Maybe that may be where you need to start right now. I encourage you to do that. Let's bow our heads together. Let's just bow our heads and close our eyes together real quick. Maybe just ask God right now, say, God, please examine my heart. Show me what it is that I need to do right now. Show me where I stand with You. And if He shows you that you need to trust Jesus, then do that now. Don't wait. Don't put it off. What are you waiting for? You have the opportunity now. Just tell Him. Say, Jesus, I want to give my heart to You. I want to surrender my life to You. I need You. I want to follow You. I don't want to be like the person in the parable that just hung around good people but didn't really have a relationship with You. God, I need a relationship with You. those of you that are already followers of Christ, just ask God to examine your priority list and what you're spending your life and your time on. Is it on loving God, loving people, and changing the world? Does that even rank anywhere on your top five? If it doesn't, it needs to be up there. You know, ask Him to give you a heart that will get that there. Father, I don't even really know where to start, Lord, because I'm guilty a lot of the stuff that I'm even preaching about, God, because I get involved in ministry and I get busy. And even when I'm doing stuff that's ultimately for you, sometimes it becomes all about providence or it becomes all about me. And I just get busy and I forget. God, I forget that you died on a cross for me. I forget that you redeemed me, that you love me, and that you gave me this message to share it with people that are hurting, that need help. And God, I get focused on myself and my little comfort zone and my family. And I get ate up with worrying about how many people show up, how many people don't show up, budgets, all kind of stuff, God. I don't want to be like that. Lord, I want to be found doing what you want me to do when my life ends or when you come back. Lord, I pray that you let me do that. Let us all be there, God. I pray that we will be people that are busy about doing what matters most in eternity and for you. So that, God, you take our surfing and you take our fishing, you take our hobbies and our jobs and transform them, Lord, into something that is used for your glory, that is used to reach people, that is used to love you and to love the people around us. And to change this world. Lord, I pray for those in here this morning that don't know you, or maybe that in the last few moments they really surrender their heart to you. God, I pray that they will come, Lord, talk to me about it just a moment, Lord. If they have trusted you for the first time, Lord, I celebrate that. Thank you so much, God, that you said that anyone who calls on you can be saved. Anyone that comes to you humbly, Lord, regardless of their background, regardless of where they've been. Thank you that you don't make us measure up before you forgive us, but you forgive us because we don't measure up. Now let us always be about your grace and about your message. Keep us on task and on target. I just call this in Jesus' name.